Good evening and welcome to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas. And you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget you can also stream us live by going to the website at www.guardiantalkradio.com. And you can click on the little button that says stream live and you should, if you're lucky, get the live stream. Sometimes that doesn't work, in which case you should get the app on your phone and go to the Play Store, the App Store, and download TuneIn Radio and get Guardian Radio on your phone. And then you can just listen to us all day long. I have two, I'm not going to say artists, I have two practitioners in the studio with me this evening. We are, over the next few weeks, airing shows that we taped in a huge lump while many of the visiting artists were here installing or for the opening of the next national exhibition, which is currently on show at the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas. And in January, we'll start speaking some of the Bahamian-based artists. So tonight I have, again, two practitioners, Hilary Booker, who is the artist and researcher in residence, artist researcher in residence at Hillside House. Welcome, Hilary.
Thank you very much.
And we are also speaking to John Murray, who is creating an installation in the Villa Doyle at the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas and recently graduated with a BA in art history in German and is also doing a kind of installation and social sculpture piece. So welcome, John. Welcome home. Say hello.
Hi.
I'm going to start with Hilary. So, John, you can have time to just drink your coffee and chill out. So, Hilary, tell the audience a little bit about just who you are. You were here in the Bahamas for several years. So just give everyone like a little taste of, you know,
who I am,
who you are, what you're doing. Why are you connected to the Bahamas?
Okay. I originally came to the Bahamas about 7 years ago, and I was working on a sustainable agriculture training and education program at Simpson Penn, the Boys Industrial School. And through that, which ended up taking a bit longer than I originally anticipated that it would take.
It's the Bahamas. Things do take longer than you anticipate them to take.
Of course. As a result of that, I became involved with a number of other projects. And as I began to build my own personal community and needing to have my own kind of life and support here, knowing that I needed that in order to continue with the work that I initially came to do, I became, like I said, involved with a lot of different projects and a lot of different issues that have always been, I've always been passionate about, and in many ways became more passionate about as I lived here. So I was continued to be involved with that. I have been involved with a lot around sustainable agriculture, a lot around health and wellness, a lot around food sustainability, and what else? Definitely a lot around art and culture.
Mm-hmm. And because you were actually at Pop-Up for a long time, too.
I was.
You sort of were really entrenched
right.
in
very
the kind
much
of art
embedded
community.
In the art community.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit about.
And were you able to maintain a lot of those connections after you left? With
yeah,
the community?
Absolutely. Yeah. I still feel like more of my life is in the Bahamas than it is anywhere else at this point in my life. So.
Oh, that's awesome. So you were invited to be the first artist researcher in residence as part of the National Exhibition Programming. This was the brainchild of our chief curator, Holly Bino, who wanted to bring somebody down to really spend a significant period of time here researching and, you know, again, interacting with the local art scene, with local people. And so, in fact, we then extended or we spoke to Hillside House, which is Antonius Roberts' gallery and studio, and where he has actually opened a small residency. So where there will be actually artists will be able to go live there and work there. It's currently a nonprofit, actually. It just got nonprofit status, 25 Cumberland Street. And so you are, I think, one of the first artists to be installed there. You've just been there a couple of days, though, now, right?
I have.
How's that going so far?
It's going well. It's nice to be there.
Yeah.
It's a really fantastic space. And it's a space that I was not familiar with in this iteration, but certainly I have been very familiar with Hillside House and have done some things there in the past. So the general space is something that I'm familiar with, so I knew what I was
And I think it somehow fits very well, because I think part of with what you're trying to do, which we'll speak about in just a second, because I think Antonius, though he's known as a painter very commonly, mm-hmm. I think for me his true calling and his really great work are the kind of social reclamation projects where
Absolutely.
he reclaims space for Bahamians,
Absolutely.
Where he you know creates sculptures that take over an right. area that say, you know, this is for us and this is our land, and that whole creation of the Hillside House was also really part of that practice, which
Absolutely.
Was sort of taking an old house and restoring it and right in the center of downtown. So how is that for you to be living now, like right in the center of downtown in that wonderful kind of oasis garden?
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
I love it there. So
yeah, and yeah, so
it's one of my favorite spaces
in
NASA.
It always
has been.
It's a great, great space. It's got good energy. So, and I think what he does is what has come to be termed in the contemporary art world as sort of a social sculpture,
right.
which is moving people around or bringing people together
right.
in a way to kind of engage conversation and talk about new ideas.
Right.
And it's something that, I mean, it was started probably, I'd say, in the late 60s and early 70s, and you think about people like Joseph Beuys. But I think it's become much more common now that this idea of that cooking can be an art form
mm-hmm.
or something like that. So really tell us a little bit specifically about what you're doing. You're creating this space called the Moonflower Room.
Yes.
At Hillside House.
Yes.
Tell us what you're doing in the Moonflower Room and what that means for our community.
The Moonflower Room is sort of a way of expressing my dissertation research for my PhD, which I just completed. And so instead of presenting a 220-page document to a bunch of people that's, you know, very much academically oriented, I wanted to present something that would make sense of sort of the work that I've been doing and the various philosophies and theories that I've been working with that are very much creative, very much artistic, are from the creative, both the creative cultural community and economy from the Caribbean, as well as from the political and radical communities from the Caribbean. And so I wanted to bring those together in a way that people could really experience them with their senses viscerally. And my research is about food and intentional food practices and food sustainability. And
what's an intentional food practice?
An intentional food practice, a food practice is any interaction with food. So it could mm-hmm. be anything from growing food, how somebody consumes food, prepares food, what food someone consumes, how we handle our waste from our food. It could be mm-hmm. anything, a cultural practice, you know, eating alone, eating with other people. Mm-hmm. Who do you eat with? Mm-hmm. These are all food practices. And then an intentional food practice is enacting one of those practices for a particular purpose, mm-hmm. knowing, you know, yeah, being purposeful mm-hmm. about what you do and how you do it.
Actually quite interesting. I had a curator on the show about 2 weeks ago now who's going to be the next chief curator at the ICA in Virginia, which opens in October 2017. And formerly she was at the Smart Museum in Chicago, and she did a whole show called Feast,
mm-hmm.
which was all about eating, basically,
yeah.
and food
yeah.
and how that is sort of an art form and the sharing
right.
of repast and
right.
what that means to a community. So
yeah, and food studies has exploded. When I started my PhD 9.5 years ago, there weren't a ton of people talking about food. There certainly were pockets here and there. Mm-hmm. In the last 9.5 years, 35 food studies programs have emerged in various universities and colleges in the U.S.
Wow.
Because it's just become this thing. But food is a really amazing vehicle for discussing any kind of issue, because it's one of those common human issues. I would say if you want to know about the human experience, you talk about food, sex, death, or birth,
mm-hmm.
because those are the things that kind of bring us all together, that we all experience. And it's also a way of discussing both our similarities and our differences.
And so what will a visitor experience when they come to the Moonflower Room, and why the Moonflower Room? Let's talk a little bit about that name and what that means.
Okay.
You.
I guess I'll talk first about the name.
Yeah.
The Moonflower Room, because a moonflower, there are moonflowers that grow in the Bahamas,
mm-hmm.
and a moonflower A is a flower that blooms at night.
Mm-hmm.
So it blooms
like
in darkness.
Jasmine.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And they usually emit these incredibly intoxicating mm-hmm. fragrances. So there's this kind of metaphor, and also not a metaphor, that I'm drawing from, that's creating beauty in darkness. Mm-hmm. So that there's always an opportunity to see beauty in darkness, which is a lot of kind of where my dissertation research came from, illuminating the beauty in what can be seen as or described as a rather desolate food system.
Mm-hmm.
So to find that beauty in what seems a little bit desolate or what seems a little bit dark.
You think the food system is desolate globally or particularly in the Bahamas? Or?
I think it's...
I mean, obviously, we're like overfishing and we're killing off our conch.
I mean, it's a global issue. Yeah. I mean, obviously, food system and food system sustainability is something that I've been working with mm-hmm. long before mm-hmm. I came here. So mm-hmm. it's definitely an issue globally, and it just manifests itself differently in different places.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's not just here, but there are a lot of issues that are particular to here, though they also tie to issues in other places for different reasons.
So, and what will the visitor experience?
When the visitor comes, they'll be experiencing, first in the actual installation, will be a bush apothecary. Mm-hmm. So the idea that the bush that grows, there's a lot of medicinal and edible plants in this landscape that a lot of people are unfamiliar with.
Mm-hmm.
So first to put on display some of these bushes and these plants that are edible and are medicinal. And then also to say that these are plants that we should be knowing about, continuing to preserve the knowledge and also protect them. Because if we don't know what they are and we don't know that they need to be protected, they can be utilized in ways that don't benefit Bahamians.
Right.
And that's something that I'm really passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
So there first will be the bush apothecary. There's also, it's also another way I'm describing it is a radical library, because I will also have books that correlate with a lot of the philosophies and theories that I drew from for my dissertation research. So there will, people can come in, they can read a book, and then there's also the local foods portion. So I'll be preparing foods that are almost entirely made from local ingredients. So I'm working with a lot of different local farmers mm-hmm. to procure local ingredients and cooking them in perhaps ways that people might be unfamiliar with or that aren't always being used here. To creatively concoct craft foods that are really delicious and really unique using what's readily available.
Mm-hmm. How fantastic. And you have an event coming up. There's actually one this evening, but it's already started. So anyone listening, you're too late.
But it is going until 9 o'clock.
But it's going until 9 o'clock.
So if you want to come.
Hop in the car. If you're in the car right now, you can just do a U-ey and head to Cumberland Street downtown to Hillside House. And then you have another. You have two more upcoming this weekend, correct? On Saturday?
One on Saturday from mm-hmm. 1 to 4 in the afternoon. And one on Sunday, which is a pre-Junkanoo event from 10 p.m. to midnight.
Okay, great. So you can come and get some actually healthy food before going to Junkanoo, which is kind of like an oxymoron, right? I mean, really, like that somehow.
No, it's all right. You can do it. It's good. It's good to balance it out. You can, you know, and it's all BYOB.
Yeah.
BYOB. So, you know, bring your liquor with you and get some healthy food.
Junkanoo, there'll be plenty.
To help mitigate. You're eating this food to help mitigate the effects of the alcohol that you're consuming.
Okay. Well, you're not going to be getting any sleep that night, right? You're actually going to have a pretty great place there on Cumberland
Absolutely.
Street. You can watch everyone getting
by. I figured, you know, I'm not going to sleep anyway, so I might as well, you know, offer some things to some other people.
Well, that sounds awesome. So we're going to go to a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to hear a little bit from John Murray. We've just been hearing from Hilary Booker, who is the first artist and researcher in residence at Hillside House on Cumberland Street as part of the National Exhibition. We are using Hillside House as an annex, as an offsite space. There are several artists' work there, but Hilary is, in fact, living at that space for several weeks and doing these events, as described, around food. So I think you can go to our website, find out more about that. You are listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back after this break. And welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas. And you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We can also go to the Facebook page at facebook.com/NAGBlankCanvas. That's NAG Blank Canvas. And you can see pictures of who's been on the show, and you can leave comments, and you can thumbs up us or not, as you may desire. We prefer the thumbs up. We like to stay positive. So I have two artists, well, actually not artists, we're calling them practitioners, in the studio with me tonight, because the National Exhibition is including poets, people that are doing what's known as social sculpture, which is a form of art, but I think neither Hillary nor John would label yourself strictly as artists. You're more researchers and social commentators or something along that line. So we heard from Hillary before the break. We're now going to hear from John Murray, who is a Bahamian who's been living in New York for how long now, John?
Five and a half years now.
Oh my God, 5.5 years. Because I remember when I moved down here, you pretty much just moved. You left because of me, didn't you?
No, of course not.
Yeah. You recently graduated from Hunter College with a BA in art history and German, which is a really interesting combo. And currently you are working on a piece at the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas. And I think the first interesting thing is that you're actually not appearing in the artist list. You don't appear with your name.
I do not, because I am not the sole person who's responsible for its manifestation.
Right.
And I'm also very conscious of my position within the conversation. The artwork, that's on display at the gallery, which is an exhibition of queer findings from the Royal Bahamian Empire, is a part of a larger project, which is the Commission of the Queer.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe that that entity has to be representative of a really broad audience, mm-hmm. And it has to make people feel welcome and comfortable. And I'm very...
So really, you're just the kind of...
I'm a facilitator.
You're a facilitator. You're correct. Just the kind of... Yeah, you're just the trigger. And so basically, it's a community piece. It exists in the National Art Gallery as sort of the first... manifestation of it physically, but it already exists online, and it will exist beyond the run of the show. And what you're doing really is kind of representing or creating an agency that somehow represents all the Bahamians that feel like they had to leave or feel alienated or feel not part of the community, really.
Yeah, I mean, that's one element, but I think the project is really aspirational and that it can be broader than that.
Yeah, sure.
And the way that we're looking at it, and one of the reasons that I don't tie myself directly to it within this space, is because I'm not the one who's dictating what the program is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the team that's collected to make this happen at this point, we're really focused on creating programming over the next few months during the NE8 mm-hmm. To invite the community to come to the table mm-hmm. and be like, well, what are we interested in as a community?
Mm-hmm.
And so the objectives that were initially started out might change and shift as mm-hmm. the months go by. And what the commission represents will change and as time goes by. And so it's hard to really dictate what the future is going to be. But it's also exciting because it opens it up for such a more interesting dialogue with the community.
And it is a kind of a sense of a dialogue already because, as you said, the piece that's actually being exhibited at the NAGB is called The Exhibition of Queer Findings from the Royal Bahamian Empire. And that's just sort of one extension. And that's really being put together by a lot of people. So I was in there the other day during install, and there was a whole bunch of people writing stories, people writing on the wall, people leaving. Explain a little bit how that works and what it is you're going to see when you go in that room, but like what that room is going to be and develop and what that represents. There's a lot
because the work is very layered, so I can approach it from many different angles. But when you come into this space, there are two primary things I think going on. The title kind of implies the Royal Bahamian Empire kind of element, this kind of imperial, or this idea of relationship between distance and location and geography. Because as someone who lives in New York now, but identifies as queer and Bahamian, it was really a struggle for me thinking about exile and ambassadorship, never feeling really at home in Nassau or in New York. And I realized mm-hmm. that I was stuck within this space where I felt that I was given an ultimatum in the Bahamas that either you act this way or you're not accepted. And then abroad, feeling like I was exiled, like even though I made that choice to do that, the sensation is still there.
You feel like it was a choice that wasn't made, that you didn't make, but it was a choice that was made for you somehow.
Exactly.
And it's like a story we hear a lot of. Yeah, because, and I think you touched on something really interesting. So there's two points, really. And one is that I don't think a lot of people here realize the loss we have to the creative community, but a lot of communities, because again, it's not like everyone wants to think that queerness just exists like amongst us because we're all like freaky and weird, but obviously that exists in every level of society, and that we're losing so many great minds and people that could really contribute to the country because of this sense of non-belonging, which runs through the whole exhibition in another way, because non-belonging can come into all of our conversations as a woman, as a person that isn't 100% of African descent, of a person who is 100% of African descent but maybe has a parent or grandparent from another island nation. So this feeling of non-belonging is really strong amongst a lot of people that feel they have to leave. So there's that. But I think also you touched on something really interesting, which is the idea of ambassadorship. Because bizarrely, we're exiling all these people, right? Or somehow people feel they have to leave because they can't exist here. And then those are the people that are going to represent the country.
Exactly.
Wherever they're living, in America, in Canada, in England, in Europe. And so that's a really interesting paradox.
It is. And you didn't ask for either of them, really. Mm-hmm. Like, you didn't ask to be exiled. You didn't ask to be an ambassador. It's just, it's what your identity becomes a part of. And then, so for me, it became really interesting because there are so many people who have left. And that number is actually increasing and not decreasing. And so it's really conflicting, and it's like, how do I address this in my own identity, my own sense of home, my own space? And something I want to just touch on with what you kind of expressed already, which is, even though I think queer is a very charged term, our definition of it is very broad, and it actually addresses what you were saying, in that I think many people associate queerness with sexual orientation or gender identity. And although that is a large base of the subject matter that we deal with, our definition of queerness is very broad, and we intentionally kept it broad to be inclusive and to think of it as less about labeling and more about of thinking of oneself in relation to the dominant culture. And so, like you said, it could be race. It could be if you're a woman, I think that's considered queer in this space.
In this space, I think it is, because I think there are women that are thinking of leaving or have left because of the result of the referendum.
Exactly. And so there's so many ways to interpret queerness, and we're really embracing that sense of that broad sense.
And I think if we go back to the actual original meaning of the word, so many of these, you know, words in the English language have been co-opted, which is fine, that's what happens with language. But, you know, if you think about the real meaning of the word queer back in the, it just meant strange or odd, right? And so many of us are perceived as being strange or odd because we don't conform to the idea of what Bahamianness is, that you're not black, you don't speak in dialect, and, you know, if you don't, then you're just not, you don't have 15 generations of people that go back, even though some of us do. So I think it's very interesting that you've broadened the term in its modern sense to go back to actually what the original sense of it really was.
Exactly. To a degree. I think we're proposing it. Mm-hmm. And I think a part of the programming that's going to happen is really going to be defining what that is, defining what queerness is for the organization, defining what queerness is in the Bahamas, and if it has a place here. Mm-hmm. You know, there's... there's a tension there between like trying to keep things broad, but also trying to define them in some kind of way.
Well, sure, because I also think, you know, the level of trauma for different individuals in that range of the word is much bigger. So to be a woman here is not so awesome, but I probably not really as bad as being someone who is not heterosexual.
I mean, the way I think we address it is that everyone has power and privilege, and everyone is like to a different degree. It's just where that is, and like how we fit on the hierarchy that we exist in. And
how does the privilege you have balance out? Because again, as a woman, I have a lot of non-privilege, but then I also have as a white woman a lot of privilege.
Exactly.
Right. So they kind of, you know, it's really interesting how those things play out. And how you have to kind of negotiate those in different instances, right?
And that's one of the reasons I've even kind of stepped back a little bit within the project, because I'm also white and male. And although I have, I am same-sex oriented and I identify as queer, that my skin color and my gender provide me a lot of authority and accessibility to spaces that other people don't have. And I have to be conscious of that. And I think that we all have to be conscious in every scenario we put ourselves in, and what... what power we have within that scenario and what mm-hmm. we can do and how we can, I think there's a way to exploit that for negatively and exploit it positively.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to take it from the perspective of facilitation as a positive way to use my access in a way to allow other people to express their stories and to like take charge mm-hmm. of their existences and how they identify. Because of course, there are a lot of people who have been doing work in this community, and you know, it's very different for me to someone who might be Black, a woman, gay, a mother, mm-hmm. like, you know, so many not Bahamian, like all these things working against you and all these intersectionalities, mm-hmm. you know, working against you. And so just to be fair to everyone, to respect everyone, mm-hmm. really.
And so how do you see this project evolving over the next few months?
That's
so
hard to...
Right now, it's really sort of a collection of stories and you know, archival material somehow is the object right now. I mean, the object that's being exhibited is that. How do you see this growing and metamorphosizing? Metamorphosing, that's the word.
I don't want to answer. I have a few ideas of myself of how I'd mm-hmm. like it to progress, mm-hmm. depending on what I think the community comes up with, mm-hmm. because that might change. I really feel like archiving is such a crucial component of the work, because we don't, you know, there is a queer history in the Bahamas, but we don't know it. It's mm-hmm. not in the textbook. You're not going to learn in school. You're not going to mm-hmm. hear about it probably as an adult. And it's like many people don't know about the immigration. Many people don't know of queer people who've done things in the Bahamas.
Or the first Black man that sat in Parliament was actually Haitian. But anyhow.
Yeah. Well, exactly. You just don't know your history. Yeah, and so a part of it is to historicize that and to mm-hmm. give it like a context that's like, oh, wow, like these things could be viewed within this lens. And I would like it to evolve into a more research-based projects, so where people can propose projects and we can facilitate them. And mm-hmm. so we can provide this primary information and a collection of primary information that could be used for research in various aspects. For example, someone has discussed about mapping out what nightlife has been like in the Bahamas for LGBT people mm-hmm. From the 50s to now. And what would that look like? What are these spaces? What, like, you know, or thinking about coming out stories and what does that mean, not just for queer people, but everyone? Like, everyone has their own kind of coming out. So Hillary was actually talking about this yesterday. And so that could be in itself its own program. Mm-hmm. And so
because you can come out in so different ways. I remember because I'm a dual citizen, and I remember in Germany after Obama got in for the first time, I was so excited that I hung a banner. I painted a banner with my children that said, yes, we can. And yes, we did. And I hung it outside my house, and all my neighbors came over and they said, wait, are you American? We always thought you were, you know, because I'd actually never owned that at all. I'd always been like, oh, yeah, I'm behind the hey, people. I have an accent. People thought I was British. And I was just like, yeah, I'm whatever you want me to be. I'm you know, I'm not going to, because there was such negativity towards Americans in Europe at that point, right? That if you even mentioned, it was just all about the war and George Bush. And it was actually really interesting. And I used to joke with my kids. I was like, well, I guess we just all came out.
That's exactly it. And the conversation Hillary and I were having about this was that everyone can relate to that.
Yeah.
Although it's called the Commission of the Queer, that queerness includes allyship. And allyship mm-hmm. should really is something we want to focus on. This isn't just like those people doing that thing. That's the exact kind of binary we're trying to get
exactly
gone,
that it's know? Us or them, or it's you know, you're that's, in this group or you're not in this
exactly,
group.
Exactly, because we're not going to be able to move forward with that kind of mentality. It has to be unified in some sense. And unification doesn't mean homogeny. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's really important, is that mm-hmm. we're looking to be able to join and connect and find the ways in which we do connect, but also express and
well, how
and
we share stories as humans. And how we share stories, right? We all have, like you said, we all share these experiences, and that mm-hmm. experience of coming out might not be the experience of telling your parents you're gay. Maybe it's a different experience of coming outness.
Definitely.
And how do we connect as humans so that we can understand each other better? Yeah, I think that's a really beautiful, beautiful proposition. So anyhow, I'm speaking to John Murray, who is the instigator behind an exhibition of queer findings from the Royal Bahamian Empire, which is one of the pieces in the National Exhibition, which is currently on at the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas. We also were speaking with Hillary Booker right before the break, and I'm going to be back with both artists shortly after this break. You've been listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back with Hillary and John after this short break. welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you are listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget, you can also go to the website, www.guardiantalkradio.com, and stream us live. And we are speaking to the management about getting the MP3 after every week's airing and putting it on our own website, because people sometimes say they miss the show. So look out for that upcoming on the NAGB website, www.nagb.org.bs. Tonight, I have two practitioners in the studio with me tonight who are both participating in the National Exhibition. It's the 8th National Exhibition, so we call that NE8. It's on the upper floors of the National Art Gallery. We still have the show on downstairs from Columbus to Junkanoo, so if you just want to go look at some nice, beautiful Eddie Minnis paintings, we got that too. But on the upper floors, we have the National Exhibition, which is mostly contemporary art show by practicing artists, more than 60 artists. We have two in the studio, not technically artists, Hilary Booker and John Murray. We heard from them both at the beginning of the show. Hilary is activating something that she calls the Moonflower Room at Hillside House, which is an experience with food, basically, just to make it simple. And John was speaking about the project that he's been a kind of instigator of, because he's not the only artist. It's really a group project that will be facilitated by anyone who really wants to join in the conversation. And the manifestation of that in the Villa Doyle is entitled An Exhibition of Queer Findings from the Royal Bahamian Empire. But it is an open project. And I think in this section, I'd just like to speak to you both about how you see your practices and kind of, do you consider yourself a little bit like artists? Because you are included in an art show, right? And there is a sort of a contemporary movement of legitimate art by many practitioners, which is called social sculpture, where people are invited into galleries or museum spaces to have these social experiences. Theaster Gates is probably one of the most famous right now with his Dorchester project up in the south side of Chicago, where he's renovated old homes and he has soul food nights, where he mixes collectors with local residents of Southside, and everyone sits around.
I'd say his work is very similar to my own, for sure.
In what way?
I think both in terms of simultaneously trying to, well, first of all, bringing people together who wouldn't otherwise probably come together is a really huge part of what I'm hoping will happen at the Moonflower Room, which is why it's a dining club and it's a little bit of a different kind of experience than probably a lot of people have had here, where there's a limited number of spots and everyone sits at one table and it's essentially farm to table, and there's one table and you don't necessarily get to choose where you sit. You kind of just fill in the seats, so it's almost as if you're coming to my house and we're having dinner. And so bringing people together, for sure. Certainly just the fact that my work is at Hillside House, which is a heritage site and a nonprofit that's very much about restoring spaces, restoring the beauty of Bahamian spaces and restoring Bahamian culture, which is a huge part of what my research has been about, both understanding the history. So as John was talking about previously, understanding what is the history of the Bahamas, understanding that history, you know, from a long range term, and at the same time understanding that from the evolution of history is now evolving emerging culture, and that now, you know, a little bit after 40 years following independence, there are emerging cultures and emerging lifestyles that are, you know, new and unique, specifically uniquely Bahamian, and a lot of them are all very different. So the idea of both understanding that culture is a movement that grows, and also that it's multifaceted, and again, to get back to John's previous comment about, you know, this difference between integration and assimilation, definitely not trying to homogenize. This is what Bahamian culture is, you know, these two things. If you don't fit in...
Culture is never really one thing, is it?
It never is.
And I think there is also something very different, and it's something that I think we really have trouble identifying here, because, again, there's quite a big difference in any country between mass culture and elite culture, let's be honest. Yes. I mean, Mozart wasn't making music for, like, the farmers. He was making music for the emperors, right? And so you know, the culture that Europe is, so the quote-unquote culture in terms of fine art that right. Europe is so known for was really an elite culture.
Right.
And then when you think about, like, food and Oktoberfest and, you know, like, the running of the bulls, you know, right. then you talk about these kind of annual things or food and drink, right. which is more of the kind of mass culture. Right. And I think here we're kind of a little bit scared of the elite culture because we don't like that word.
Right.
And it is scary because, again, there's this whole history of privilege.
Yeah.
And so I think very often things that are labeled as cult, quote unquote culture, right. not that aren't junkanoo, right. Whether if it's painting or sculpture, is seen as something kind of that nobody can be a part of because it's elite.
Right. And I think I also come at this from a more kind of anthropological definition of mm-hmm. culture, which I think is different than perhaps this idea of a mass culture or an elite culture.
Mm-hmm.
I think those anthropologically, ethnographically, are kind of subsections of
yeah.
what the culture is, essentially sure. our practices and rituals of everyday life, you know, so it's a very broad thing.
Yeah.
And
yeah, but nonetheless, both spaces, I mean, Hillside House is still an elite space.
Oh, absolutely.
In a period. And you
right.
know, you're not going to get like your average like
right.
resident from the valley coming to have dinner at your Moonflower Room, even though that might be nice because it, you know, and same with a Villa Doyle. I mean, we have this problem which is that, you know, we want to reach a mass audience. We want everyone to be involved. But the spaces themselves come
yeah.
with a history.
I have to say, I don't know that we might not have people mm-hmm. from the Valley showing up at the Moonflower.
Well, I mean, maybe we will. But, you know.
Because I will say that a lot of my work mm-hmm. Has not been done in the elite mm-hmm. space or in elite spaces. Mm-hmm. A lot of my work and the various communities that I have been working with and even the people I'm most connected to are not necessarily from the elite culture or from... So
sure. No, I understand that. Same for the NNGB. I mean, we
right.
go out into the community.
Right.
We go to the Out Islands. We do projects outside of Villa Doyle.
Yeah.
But very often to get the people that we've connected with in other environments to come into the Villa Doyle is very often the challenge.
I will say when I did my poetry event at Hillside mm-hmm. House last year, the majority of the people who came to that event are people who I think would not necessarily be definitely would not identify, and I don't think most people would identify with them as being within the elite culture.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying, but at the same time, I think we had a talk during the NE7. I think you might have even been there, John, when we were talking about, we had a talk about whiteness and privilege. And someone, it was very, very packed with people mm-hmm. and people from every single mm-hmm. walk of life. And somebody stood up and said, well, I think we just have to acknowledge that actually, and let me say, 98% of the people in the audience were of African descent. And the man stood up, who's, you know, a guy who's a fisherman that I know. Mm-hmm. And he stood up and he said, the fact that we're all here in this room having this conversation
right.
means we're all white.
Right.
Which was really
right.
interesting,
yeah.
right? Because again,
yeah.
it's I'm not saying that's what it is, but it's how it's perceived is
right.
what I'm saying.
Right.
So I think I even want to stop calling them elite spaces because they're not.
Right.
Or
yeah,
they shouldn't
exactly.
be.
Right.
But, you know, we have to change the
terminology.
Right.
So I think that's really the kind of challenge here is that we're having these conversations that we want to be accessible to everybody,
right.
but are we being realistic? And what do you think about that, John?
Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, I was going to say, I think, yeah, it's an aspiration, right? Like
yeah.
we aspire to be,
right.
to have this open space. And I think that we have to kind of be the example of that space, though. Like
mm-hmm.
we can't like
right.
already begin to make those
right.
barriers, and we have to think about how. And that's why I believe that, like, in the project, the Commission for the Queer Project has taken the format that it has because it can't be a top-down methodology. Like, it just doesn't mm. work.
No, it has to be bottom-up. And
right.
again, I
and,
think that you have a website
no,
also.
It has to be bottom-up, top-down.
Yeah. Top-down,
right.
side, yeah, exactly.
All of it
all
at
the
same
things.
Time.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
and we have to understand that takes time.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
like, although I can have, we have an aspirations of what this thing could be, and we understand that, you know, I've had many conversations where it's like, no one's going to look at anything in the room. No one's
right.
going to care for, like, the next 5 or 10 years.
Right.
But I know, there's not a question in my mind
right.
that 10 years from now, when people look back, they're going to be like, oh, this thing's important. This thing, it starts
Absolutely.
To be rethought. It starts to become a part of
someone
people's
has
expectations.
To be, someone has to start it. You
exactly.
know?
It's a continual
yeah.
dialogue that, so, you know, I think expectations need to be realistic, but
yeah.
But by being realistic, it's saying, keep it open, expect for it to be open. Don't be disappointed, though.
Right.
Like, you know, like not to like,
right.
you
yeah,
can't.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing, you know, one of the ideas that I'm drawing off of for the Moonflower Room is this idea of a third space. So instead of, you know, again, the same idea of creating an experience versus, you know, giving a lecture, you know, I'm not we don't have a panel presentation of five people and we're all going to sit there and, you know, have a discussion. It's really literally an organic discussion, and the space is open for people to come in. And so, you know, a third space is a space where, you know, people can come together, again, who wouldn't normally come together. And so the idea is to take this thing of food, of local food and health and plant-based foods, and use that as kind of a space to bring people together, because everybody eats, and you know, to see that in a different way. And my own experience living here, and again in the community that I have created for myself, is that that has brought an incredibly diverse group of people.
Yeah, definitely.
Into
food will. I mean, I think the art world is extremely diverse, but I think food is even capable of reaching.
Right.
Food and gardening are two things.
Right,
that reach
and there's
across,
also a gardening component to what I'm doing and to what I've been doing. So, I think again, you know, creating just a different sort of forum to have different kinds of conversations is something that's hopefully going to be new and different. Mm. And again, is it going to solve all the problems tomorrow? Not even remotely. But, you know, I always believe that if two people who have never talked before talk about something and find something in common, that's a good place to start. I mean, so that's an amazing and miraculous thing. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like going, like what you mentioned when we first started speaking about, there was tons of people in the room at Villa Doyle kind of writing out these stories.
Right.
Something that I decided to do relatively last minute, which I think building off of what you're saying, is we received many submissions from people who identify as queer Bahamians who live here, also abroad, to just share an excerpt from their life story that relates to the sense of queerness. But instead of just printing them, I've invited the community to come and handwrite
right.
on behalf of these people. And it's really interesting, the dialogue that's been happening, and people have been reading these and interpreting them and being like, wow, like feeling connected to this story that's not really their story,
right.
But they feel a bond, and they're buying into this thing. And I think that that's this power in that. There's so much like...
do you think we've become almost too civilized as a culture, and I mean globally, that we now have to have
civilized.
Yeah, well, okay,
those are tough words.
Quote unquote civilized, to need art to create what should be a normal human experience.
Can you repeat the question again?
Well, I think, you know, that 100 years ago, I think it would have been very hard to like pass off as art something where you bring people together to eat or share stories. It was just seen as like the everyday.
I think it depends on who you ask, though, because this again gets to who gets to define what art is and what defines as art. I think the history of human experience is that we are creative beings. You know, we are intellectual and creative beings, and we haven't gotten to where we are. You know, I think all innovation could be considered art because it's all a result of the creative process. And so I think really, hopefully, what's happening now, I mean, again, so much of my work is about decolonization and decolonizing academia, decolonizing art production, and decolonizing definitions. You know, what do we define as art? Who gets to define what is or isn't art?
I mean, but that's what I mean.
Versus,
really, this is a very interesting question, because
right.
I think probably storytelling and sharing large meals, if you think back to ancient Greece, that was something that just people just did. And it wasn't that had to be orchestrated in this particular space necessarily.
But I think there's a lot of orchestration. I mean, that is also
well, there was
what
a lot of orchestration, but, you know, it seems to be...
But again, in ancient Greece was such a hierarchical, you know, society, such a... The beginning of really colonization as we know it now, you know, that's kind of where it started when we decided that, you know, these people get to be considered intellectual and these people get to be considered non-intellectual. And we started creating, you know, more class systems... As we being, you know, Europeans started creating,
but by
more
doing it in
systems.
A dedicated art space, is that not playing into that whole structure? I suppose is
to a degree.
The question.
I think so.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like
yep.
It's
absolutely.
You know, and I think there's a balance with that, and that's something that the commission thinks about too, because we're really particular about like where the locations and that people feel welcome and safe, and that it doesn't, because you know, it's one of those things where like you critique within and outside of the system.
Right. Absolutely. Like, and both are necessary.
Yeah. It's
both,
you know,
are necessary.
Like, for example, like we talk about Caribbean art, like what is that question
right.
mark? Is it anything?
What is
no.
the Caribbean? What
but
is
like,
art?
But like we still use that construct to assist
right.
the overall
right.
goal
right.
of education
right.
and being able to articulate these experiences.
Right.
And so there are pros and cons to using these terms.
Right.
I think is that we need to view them as more guidelines. Like
yes.
these are more like loose.
Yep.
They're not that designed to label. They're designed to assist us in understanding
right.
one another, not to limit who
right.
we are and how we perceive.
And this is a conversation John and I have been having a lot over the last couple of days, is really about, you know, what is this negotiation between structure and flexibility? Like I always say, if we didn't have bones, if we didn't have a skeleton, we couldn't move.
Right.
So we need some level
need,
of structure.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's about also how do we
operate
have flexible structures that... allow for more people to be included, for more perspectives to be included. And generally, you know, I think what we're both interested in is how can art, how can creativity, the creative process, the creative culture, whatever that is, also support, you know, generally the, you know, the liberation of the human experience, you know, and of the mind, and create greater equity for all people. And I think art always has, you know, art, however defined, has definitely done that in the past. And I think it's continuing to do that more and more.
Oh, well, I mean, I agree, or I wouldn't do what I do. But
right,
I think, you know,
absolutely.
Again, like there's something about being like at a particular space.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there's a difference between doing the Commission of the Queer at the National Art Gallery or doing it at Pop-Up. There's a difference in
right.
doing a Hillside House
right.
or doing it actually over the hill in someone's
right.
you know
yep.
front yard kitchen.
Yep.
So they're very different statements,
yep.
right? So I think, you know, it's interesting to also to think about
yeah.
that conflict that
and
we
I
kind
say,
of all have to negotiate,
yeah,
right?
Definitely.
Too, though, you know, again, that this is an iteration of my research,
mm-hmm.
and so much of my research took place in over the hill kitchens.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, and so in a way, I almost feel like I'm bringing this research that's been done in a particular context kind of into the elite rather than needing to go the other way around,
mm-hmm.
like demonstrating it in a different kind of way. And then again, that anyone would be open. But yeah, I think I understand this again because I have so much context behind it in terms of my research that, mm. you know, I'm kind of moving, I guess, in a different kind of direction. So, yeah.
Well, anyway, okay, well, thanks. I mean, we're almost at the end of our time, so there's not too much more we can say. John, you want to say a last few words before we sign off, or are you good to go?
I just want to say that we have a website and that if you're interested, you should check it out. It's queercommission.org. You could see some of the stuff that's going to be up at the NEGB if you're not able to come to the space. There's also the timeline that has a lot of the stories that have been submitted. And a last comment is that we're also looking at like where... that this is for everyone. Like, and you just yeah. saying like over the hill to the, like I'm incorporating artists who might be considered an elite space, but also people who would never even
right.
engage that space, and thinking
right.
about accessibility and
right.
like to what degree that people have, you know, immigration itself is interesting because I was able to go to school,
right.
whereas
mm-hmm.
Someone else,
sure.
There are people who are refugees who are participating in the show and had to take that route
mm-hmm.
because they didn't have access to the things that I have access
right.
to. And so thinking
right.
about the broad scale of
yes.
of what this can encompass and that
yeah.
everyone is welcome. And so visit the website, queercommission.org, and come check out the show.
Yeah, exactly. Come check out the show. And if you're in the car and you're still listening, do a U-turn and go to Hillside House right now, where Hillary is cooking up some awesome edibles. And also on the 24th at what time? 2 o'clock?
1 to 4 on the 24th,
one to
and
four.
The 25th from 10 p.m. to midnight. And there's some other events too, and there will be some other community meetings and community events too, so please go to the Moonflower Room Facebook page to get more information about the other events that will be held over the next couple of weeks.
Okay, well, so thank you for listening. You were hearing from Hillary Booker and John Murray, who are participants in the National Exhibition currently on view at the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas. It will be on view until the end of April, but I do encourage you to make several visits because there's a lot of very compelling work that needs some thought, and maybe one visit wouldn't be enough. We are open from Tuesday to Saturday from 10 to 5 and on Sunday from noon to 5, and please don't forget that on Sundays it is always free to all Bahamians and all local residents. So there is no reason to not come to the National Art Gallery. It's there, it's free you. You've been listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas. And you've been listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Thank you so very much for listening. And good night.